Connection Network. Welcome again to the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. This will be episode number 34. Wow, in the mid-30s. Gonna keep on chugging though. A returning guest on the show this time around. We are on our way slowly, but we have still a few weeks out. We're headed to No Mercy 2002, which is a pretty famous show. I'm looking forward to getting there. But as we continue on the road, I'll bring in my guest. You can find him guest on many wrestling podcasts on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. He is also one of my compatriots on the Highway to the Impact Zone here. And he also has a non-wrestling podcast that is fantastic, which is the Piece of the Action Pod, which is a really cool show. I'm sure I'll tell you about it at some point during this. But I'll bring him in. It's Mr. Matt Souza. What's up, Souza?
Jake, good to be back. Good to be talking about 2002 WWE. And, you know, we'll get into it. But as you mentioned off air, a tale of two different shows we're going to be talking about this evening. So looking forward to diving in.
Yes, it's going to be a continuing trend, building off of what Ryan and myself talked about on the last show. It's kind of maybe not as much of a stark contrast as last week, but roughly in the, you know, the trend is definitely starting to develop. But yeah, so we'll get into it with the sort of the news and notes to start us off, which these are always, sometimes I just pick these for like the obscurity. Like things that I don't remember happening. But so our first one, this one might amuse you, Matt, is that Bryan Adams, formerly known as Crush, will make his professional boxing debut on an undercard upcoming event in Las Vegas. Randy Savage will be in his corner. He is 36, which is too late for him to ever make any kind of serious attempt at being a boxer. And they're mostly selling this on the hype that Savage will be in his corner more than anything. Now, this doesn't actually end up panning out, but imagine what could have been of the Bryan Adams boxing career, Matt.
Man, you know, Brian Crush Adams, Crush, I'm assuming what his boxing nickname would be. Boy, I mean, with Randy Savage in his corner, I mean, what could possibly go wrong there? I mean, 36, starting boxing at 36. I mean, that's a fantastic idea. I don't know what you think, Jake, but...
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be the prime. And especially, he never really struck me as somebody who was... maybe the most, I mean, at one point I think he was, but as time went on, maybe, I don't know. And, 2002 Randy Savage in your corner would be, I feel like he would take all the attention away because I feel like by the new millennium, Savage was quite a character. Yeah. I mean, he always was, but in the new millennium, he became quite a, quite a spectacle of a human being.
I mean, he was probably like still on the roids, like massively at that point, because didn't the first Spider-Man movie come out in 2002?
And yeah, I think so.
He was juiced to the gills in that. So, I mean, If anything, it should be Randy Savage boxing and Bryan Adams in his corner. But
yeah, I don't know if he'd be able to swing his arms to be able to box by this point, because he was juiced to the gills. So we have some Ring of Honor and XPW notes here. It's Ring of Honor, Ring of Honor's progression. That's how they've been tracking, just to see how it parallels the WWE at this point. But we have a story about Ring of Honor and XPW held competing shows in Philadelphia in October, less than a mile apart from each other. Each drew around 400 to 450 fans during the week before XPW began offering more money to advertise ROH stars to come work the XPW show instead. So very XPW thing to do there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some guys earning $100 for the Ring of Honor show were offered $500 to do XPW. Homicide's tag team partner Boogaloo, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. I don't know how far Boogaloo went in the in wrestling. His name doesn't ring a bell, but he was the only one who accepted the offer, and he worked the XPW show under a mask, which apparently ROH was none too happy about it because they never used him again. As the ROH show was going on, XPW called up Steve Corino, who was at the ROH show, and offered him $1,000 to leave and come to XPW and do a run-in. He declined. This has resulted in former rivals ROH and CZW beginning to work together out of a mutual desire to get rid of XPW. Another note from the ROH show, Insane Clown Posse showed up the day of the show and asked if they could work a match, and they did. Crowd didn't like it and chanted, "Don't come back," until when it was over.
Boy, that's a lot. Who can forget when Boogaloo jumped ship? It was just like when Scott Hall showed up in the crowd on Nitro.
One of the great what ifs in wrestling history. What if Boogaloo stays in ROH and doesn't make the jump to XPW? It's like the one case of like the butterfly effect where like nothing changes. You know, it's like he did it. Nothing, absolutely nothing changed. But I do like the kind of this little rivalry they have going on. I also like the how they pick between ROH and XPW. It's kind of like a at this point, you know, they're both starting up, but it would kind of end up being like a, what would you call it, like a Betamax VHS or whatever kind of choice.
Blu-ray and HD DVD type of situation.
Luckily, it seems most of the guys made the right decision here and kind of stuck with ROH, which probably wouldn't be affiliated with XPW.
Worked out for the best, definitely.
Yeah, so, but that's about it. Kind of a slow news week. Nothing of too much of note. There might be a few, I think, connected to the actual events of the show, but we can hop right in. So we'll start with the September 30th, 2002 episode of Raw, which we are live from Houston, which is kind of a notable location for them, even going back to the 80s. I think Houston's, once they kind of went nationwide, I feel like Houston kind of became one of their hot spots. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we end up with Eric Bischoff. He's fired up in the ring. He's with Lita, who we haven't seen in quite a while, at least not in the arena. We've seen her at, you know, in Times Square or whatever, at WWF New York or whatever they call it now, the world. But we haven't seen her in ring because of her injury that Bischoff is about to call out for. But he's fired up. He says we get three title matches tonight. He says Trish is going to defend the women's title and that the IC championship and the world championship will end up being unified. And so tonight we're going to have an IC title match, which will also function as a number one contenders match, because at No Mercy, the world champion and the IC champion will go against each other, and those two belts will become one, a la the Spice Girl. So the so we are soon to be on. Before I keep going, it's kind of a important thing to mention here. So the IC title going away. Any thoughts on the IC title being, I guess, done away with essentially here?
Yeah, didn't make a lot of sense to me. The last time I was on, you know, I said 2002 is a pretty big blind spot, and for me, and I didn't get back into it until 2003-ish. And I remember, you know, hearing when I started watching wrestling again that the Intercontinental title was gone, and I was just like, why? Like, what's the point of getting rid of the main secondary title on Raw? Because, I mean, the European title was already gone by this point. So, I mean, they basically just have the world title, the IC title, and I think the hardcore title was gone too. So, like, yep. I don't really understand the point of doing away with a secondary title for Raw. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, you could still do a champion versus champion match, but just have it be champion versus champion. Like, you don't have to do away with the secondary title. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it's a weirdly like opposite mindset of what they have in the present time, where they're just like, all the belts, give us the, we just have so many belts. Now, at this point, they want to get rid of. Well, the weird thing to me, too, is like, well, I think the big argument is like, well, could the title Triple H has? That could have been the IC title, but, you know, we won't get into all the what goes into that of like, is it good enough for whoever, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's one thought. And then another thing about getting rid of is the roster has so many guys who just seem like the platonic ideal of good IC champions. Like, there's so many guys who just seem like guys who could be IC champ that could be a stepping stone. Like, they have so many, like, your Eddies and your, you know, your Booker T's and all those guys. Those guys were, like, made to be IC champion, like, in a different era, you know?
Yeah, that's a thing that'll kind of play into what we're going to talk about later on, because, I mean, this Raw roster, and we'll get into it, isn't exactly the deepest. So, I mean, giving someone who really needs a boost the IC title could really push them into the main event before they go to the world title, you know? Like, I feel like Raw, at this point, there's a lot of people who are, like, kind of in the middle, but there's not a lot of, like, real top guys. And we'll see a perfect example of that later on. But, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to get rid of the IC title.
Yeah, it's a good point, too, because I find Raw is not super focused right now, and they almost have – like you said, it's not the deepest, but even with the guys they have, they almost feel like they don't know what to really do with all of them. It would give you something. I mean, a championship is an easy thing to kind of focus on and have like a division. But yeah, for whatever reason at this time, they were really about stripping it down to the bare bones with the titles, like pretty much getting rid of everything. But anyway, Bischoff says that it's a radical idea, but that's what he's all about. You know, controversy creates cash and whatnot. Now he turns his vitriol to Lita, who he confronts about a quote that she said, apparently on like a Raw magazine or on the website or something like that, where she said essentially that SmackDown was the better show than Raw. And so, of course, Raw's Bischoff shows, so he's very upset at that. He calls her a bitch and then says she broke her neck and is worthless. So pretty brutal verbal assault here on Lita by Bischoff, saying that she tried to be an actress and broke her neck.
Pretty rough stuff, Finn. I mean, Bischoff's a great sleazebag, but boy, this was a touch too far, I think. And you know, watching it with 2021 eyes, this certainly would not fly today.
A man in a position of power berating the female employee is probably not a good look. But yeah, they're gonna chalk it up to him being a heel, I guess, is their thing. But I agree, it was pretty brutal. But Lita then says, kind of turns back on it. Another bad part of this too is that Lita's a little bit out of her league talking here. It'd be one thing if he was berating her and she was somebody who could like jab back at him, but by no means is Lita's strength on the mic. Right. And so that doesn't hurt either, because she tries to go back at him, but she's kind of similar to her protege Jeff Hardy, is a little bit awkward on the mic. And so she says something about how Bischoff has no respect for the wrestlers, he doesn't care about them. And then he cuts her off and says he's going to give her three minutes. And, of course, that out come Rosie and Jamal. The crowd pops as Jeff comes out, as he comes to the rescue. But he ends up getting knocked out. And Booker T and Goldust have to come and make the true save, because, as I covered on the last show, they are beginning to feud with Bischoff. And, as a result, Rosie and Jamal, too. So, I don't know. I wasn't a big fan of this. I thought the whole Lita thing was kind of dumb. It's them trying to do this whole, like, bringing real life stuff into it. But I'm never big on the, like, I don't know, like, the management being brought into the storyline of, like, I can't believe you would talk about the company like that. I don't know. It's so hard to pull off, right? I mean, it's just something they're always going to be obsessed with because the gold they got with Stone Cold. But, like, to me here, it just didn't work. Lita couldn't keep up to be able to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, no, kind of a, not great overall. I mean, it led to the opening match for the show, but I feel like they could have easily found another way to do that, and you didn't necessarily need Lita to do it. But yeah, like Bischoff, like I said, is a great sleazebag, but yeah, this just wasn't great. Like Lita couldn't really throw any great counter punches because, like you said, she's not a great talker. So, yeah, just not great. Not a great way to start the show.
Yeah, it's kind of like she got sent out there to die a little bit. But like you mentioned, it was really just a way to get to our opening match, which is going to be 3-Minute Warning versus Booker T and Goldust, which was set up for last week. So we knew this match was coming, but he kind of it gets thrown to us all of a sudden based on this altercation. So they kind of go into – I've covered it with Book Dust before, so I'm not going to keep rehashing their matches beat for beat because they kind of do a typical tag form and stuff, which they do really well, like I've said, during the whole run. We get Goldust. He's kind of like the face in peril. And especially in this match, I thought he looked really good, like, selling because he just looks like death. Like, 3-Minute Warning are just hitting him, and he's just dropping like a rock. Like, they're just knocking him out. So he's making them look great. But as typical with them, Goldust sells. He's kind of the face in peril. You get the hot tag to Booker T. And again, it works because they're really over and they're both really good in each role that they have in the team. But it's just, it's kind of just their way of going about it. But Rosie, we do get an awkward spot, though, as the match goes on where Rosie is a little bit late to break up. So Booker T comes in on the hot tag. He hits the scissors kick and he pins Jamal, and Rosie's supposed to come in and break it up, but he's like late on his cue. So you get a weird moment where the ref kind of stops counting before he's actually broken up the pin because the ref can't let the finish happen. So kind of botched that whole sequence. So that was a little bit rough. But after they break up that pin, they actually then isolate Booker T. Rico, who's of course their manager-ish person, kind of distracts. And allows 3-Minute Warning to get the splash. And they actually win this one, which was a little bit unexpected to me because Book Dust are positioned pretty highly right now. But I guess they're trying to establish 3-Minute Warning and make them important. I don't know if I would have done it this quick. I know you have Rico distracting. As far as the match, it was pretty good stuff. I probably docked it a little bit because that one rough spot was a little bit janky, but I still went 2.25. What did you think? Give me your thoughts on the match, Matt, but what did you think of kind of Rosie and Jamal in ring overall?
Yeah, so the match overall I thought was pretty good. Was a hot opener. The crowd was really hot for this. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Booker T being the hometown guy, they were on fire for this. Like you said, it was sloppy at points. That finish was a little sloppy. And there was another part earlier in the match where they go for a flapjack type move on, I think it was Goldust, and he just lands square on his shoulder. So, I mean, Jamal and Rosie, they're still kind of raw at this mm-hmm. point, but like they're really good. I think for the spot they've been given as, you know, Booker Bischoff's henchman, I think they've did pretty well here. The splash is absolutely incredible. I love that mm-hmm. splash. And, you know, I don't think they're ever going to be something like, you know, like a main tag team. Like, I don't know if they're ever going to go for the tag titles, but as far as like being Bischoff's henchman doing his dirty work for him, I think this is a perfect role for them for that, you know, mm-hmm. 250-pound guys just running shop on people that Bischoff can't stand. I mean, it's mm-hmm. pretty good for them. So, I mean, they may not win titles or anything, but I guess they would still end up getting a pretty big push if they stay in that role, just being Bischoff's henchmen. So, but yeah, I went 2 stars on the match overall.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good stuff, but I'm with you. To me, they seem like their individual spots, like they have some really impressive spots, but they're not super fluid. Kind of you could tell by the mm-hmm. like missing the cue sort of thing. So I'm with you on that one, but they definitely have a lot of potential. I think I just thought it was weird to have them pin. I just feel like this is, you know, something that's going to keep going. So it was kind of odd for Booker T and Goldust to get pinned. I almost wish they would have just went with a DQ or something, like have 3-Minute Warning, get out of hand and use a table or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just Booker T and Goldust have been kind of decently well protected, so I almost wish they would have let it keep going. And maybe if you want Rosie and Jamal to win down the line, but to me, I don't know, for just a quick, you know, like opening match to Raw, I don't know right. if I'm out. It's a nitpicky thing, but anyway, we head backstage where Coach asked Rico about what their goal is after that win, which Rico says is going to be, he wants to lead them to be the most dominant tag team and to be the world champions. And so I forget who it was, Rosie or Jamal, but they actually talk at this and they were okay. They're just kind of, you know, rough, tough, screamy kind of guys. But it cracked me up because he says something, one of them said something like, if anyone gets in the way, we're going to crush him. And like, your punk ass coach, like, why would they think coach would get in their way? Like, you better get in our way, coach. He's like, what? I had no plans to. I'm not a wrestler.
Yeah, I don't think he had any intention of going after those large men. So I don't think you have to worry about coach.
It's just a funny moment because, you know, they just wanted to act like, you know, mean and tough. It was just weird to go after coach. Like, you know, if anyone gets in the way, like you, coach, like your punk ass.
You announcer, you.
Sure. But so keeping Rosie and Jamal strong. I was kind of surprised they got to talk, but they were fine for what they did. Mm-hmm. We now head to the Un-Americans, where we see Storm and Christian arguing over who cost them the belts last week. Tess breaks it up, and then Regal, of course, has kind of become, I don't want to say the leader of the Un-Americans lately, but I guess more the voice of reason here, says that they need to focus on what they're doing so they could kind of make a comeback, which he pretty much said last week too. So we'll see what happens to the Un-Americans throughout the show. But now we hit to Jericho, who says that he's not worried about the title unification because it means he will get a title shot. So he's already calling out that he's going to win. And he says that he's being interviewed by Terry, I should set up. But he says that Kane's chances of winning are as real as Terry's chest, which was
that was something.
Yeah, but so he's going to be Kane and Jericho will be facing, Jericho being the IC champ now, so they'll be facing later on tonight. We then get an appearance who he pops through the interview, Greg Helms, reporter, of course, no affiliation to the Hurricane, and asks how does Jericho think he could beat Kane. And then Jericho pretty much just says, like, because he's awesome and the greatest. And then he goes on to say that freaks are losers. So kind of going off Kane's recent catchphrase that freaks are cool or whatever. And Kane walks up now. And so Jericho kind of backs down a bit when he approaches, and Jericho just completely bails. And then Terry, who is apparently smitten after Kane's just laying a kiss on her last week, wants another kiss this week. And this time she initiates it. And then Kane turns to the reporter, Mr. Gregory Helms, and says that chicks dig the mask. So there we go. Pushing this whole Kane as Mr. Cool guy. Yeah.
This, I don't have too much to say on this segment, except, boy, it was a whole lot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot happening, not of which I'm quite clear on what's happening, but it was entertaining, I'll say that.
I feel like Hurricane's good at this kind of stuff, though. He can take this
totally.
this goofy shit, and he kind of makes it work. Like, I don't know if it's just – he kind of has a charm about him where he can kind of make stuff that – I feel like other people in this role maybe would not be able to pull it off, but he can. Yeah. Because obviously they're playing off the Superman thing in case, you know, in case it wasn't pretty obvious to anyone. But, yeah, I think it was just a quick segment to kind of build up the match between Kane and Undertaker and give us a little comedy and – It is interesting, this whole Kane character they're pushing, given what's to come in the next few weeks with Kane. It's going to be a real big, it's going to be quite a swerve, I'll put it that way. But all right, we'll head to our next match, which is going to be Lance Storm as he tries to get the Un-Americans back on track. And he's going to be facing the new rookie sensation that has been signed to Raw, Randy Orton. And then Christian is outside, and he's kind of watching with glee as Orton gets a lot of offense to start the match because he and Christian are kind of having a little bit of a squabble after losing, trying to decide who's to blame. So we just get a pretty basic few minutes of back and forth until Randy reverses a roll up and wins. It was very quick, not barely much of a match here. It was kind of more just, as we'll get through these next two matches, it was all sort of an angle, a kind of just an excuse to let Orton kind of show his stuff. And you know, pretty smart by them, I think, though, putting them in there with these two guys, like guys like Storm and as in a second with Christian. I think these are good guys to put them in there with who can kind of lead them a little bit and let him showcase his stuff, but, you know, can kind of, you know, guide him around so he doesn't get lost as a rookie since he is still so green. But I thought Orton looked pretty good. I went a star and a half for the match. It was nothing too much. It was just kind of them going back and forth for a few minutes until Randy got the win. Any thoughts on the Storm Orton portion of this, Matt?
Yeah, I thought it was decent enough sprint. I went a star on it. I thought Orton looked pretty good. Just another note I had during this match, two words. It was during this match, I don't know if you had this, Jake, where we find out who Triple H is defending his world championship against later in the evening. So, and I love how they kind of just mention it in passing. Like, <Yes. laughs> because the other thing we didn't mention is really throughout this entire episode of Monday Night Raw, they are super driving home the point that they do not want you to switch over to Monday Night Football.
Yes.
Like, it's all over this show. So, I don't know if you want me to mention who Triple H is defending the title against now, or if you want me to wait.
Go ahead. But reveal it.
So,
give us the shocking info.
In an effort to prevent people from switching to Monday Night Football, Triple H will be defending the World Championship later this evening against Bubba Ray Dudley. So,
yes. Yeah, so stemming off of the we'll kind of talk about that whole package in a minute. But yeah, stemming from their altercation last week, and as we're going to see Bubba claiming to be the kind of the voice of the people, I guess we'll say. Mm. But yes, that's going to be, you're right. I was going to mention it later too, because it just keeps on. And a little teaser, I'll reveal. I actually looked up what game it was.
I did too.
Yeah. So we'll talk about it later. We'll build a little suspense.
I had to know.
Yeah, because you were right. They even Bischoff, I think, mentioned it in the opening promo, like, mm-hmm. you want to switch to football. This is where the real action is. And King's making a bunch of stupid football jokes, like right out of the Raw Bowl from like 1996. but anyway, so Christian, of course, is very pleased to see that Orton actually won this match and that Storm screwed up. He grabs JR's hat and asks who looks stupider, him for the hat or Storm for losing. And so Christian tells Storm to wait on the outside so he can show him how it's done and he'll beat Randy. And of course, being the young upstart babyface Orton is, he accepts the challenge of two matches back to back. So again, this one is kind of similar to what we saw in the previous one. Just a lot of basic stuff going back and forth. Randy hitting some, just kind of showcasing his athleticism. He misses the crossbody, which was sort of his finisher at this point. But he then comes back and wins with it was very strange. It almost looked like he was going for a normal kind of neck breaker or his neck breaker finish. But then it's like he ended up with his leg on him. And he does this weird, like, he almost has his leg on him like he's going to do, like, a famous or something. And then, like, twists around and does a neck breaker. It looked pretty cool, actually, even though I don't even know if that's really what he was going for. It got a little... They look like they had a little bit of like miscommunication before he hit it, but they kind of saved it okay. And I like Orton here. He shows some good flashes, especially for a guy as young as him. Like, he has that snap power slam that looks really good, and all his stuff looks pretty crisp, his individual moves, and he's definitely an insane athlete here, which, you always know it, but he works a different style for the majority of his career than what he works in his early run. So it is kind of a novelty to see him doing all this kind of like fired up, almost not really high flying, but I guess I'll say less methodical than what he becomes later in his career. But I want to star on this one, similar to the first one, just to put Orton over and to sow the seeds of dissension within the Un-Americans.
Yeah, very similar match to the Lance Storm match. I thought this one was a bit sloppier at points, but I mean, still the overall point was the same. I went a star on it too. I thought the finisher, like you said, was neat looking. I thought his crossbody looked really good, but just a basic way to get Orton over. I do think it's interesting what they're doing with the Un-Americans here. Like, it feels like they're already teasing dissension and them breaking them up after like such a short amount of time. I don't know. I feel like, and we'll see it again later on, there's another match with them, but I don't know. It just feels like they're pulling the plug on the Un-Americans too quickly.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I have that. They're going down the tubes quickly. They seem to, like, you definitely get a sense as this show goes on. Like, they kind of, because you weren't really sure where they were going to go with it last week, because they might be sowing the seeds of dissension to have them come back or something. But definitely on this show, starting with this, to have them both lose, pack their back to Orton, is kind of, they were tag champs like a week ago.
Yeah.
Tag champs. And they haven't been. It's like, it's weird because I kind of remember them being around for a little while. But it seems like they're not long for this world. I guess they kind of served their purpose and they're ready to move on.
Yeah.
Which maybe at this point they should, because they have a lot of guys tied up into it and they maybe need to flesh them out a little bit more. But to cap this off, of course, Orton, being the upstanding young man he is, he gives JR the hat back just because he's such a wonderful baby face.
What a baby face. My goodness. Pure white meat.
Yeah. Giving the hat back. It was like right out of, 1987 or something. But anyway, now we go to Jeff Hardy backstage, who had – he has a haircut. So he always has like a – it's hard to tell because it's so wet. It's just sopping wet and dripping. But he kind of has like a little like bob hairdo, it looks like, going on now, as opposed to his super long locks. But he gets scolded by Eric Bischoff for saving Lita. And his punishment is going to be that he has to face Big Show again. And he wants Jeff to impress him, because he's starting to worry that he got stuck with the wrong Hardy. So another vicious comment.
I mean, was Bischoff wrong in saying that he got the wrong Hardy? I mean,
no, probably not. But
the other thing is, I love too, is there was one part during that backstage promo where Flair says that Hardy has no respect for authority when he's standing right next to Eric Bischoff. Ric Flair historically had a problem with Eric Bischoff's authority in WCW. It was a real real pot kettle black moment right there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, bygones are bygones, man.
Yeah, who
could care about that, you know, where he kissed his wife and all that just a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know. Easy
to forgive, really.
He's living the high life with Hunter right now. He doesn't have to. But anyway, yeah. It's definitely, you definitely get a sense right now that Hardy's kind of being punished a little bit for his, you know, real life issues. That they're maybe making an example of him just a bit. But anyway, Flair asks about not facing RVD tonight. Flair's kind of trying to get out of having to face RVD, so he's kind of being a little bit of a coward here. And Eric says he'll get him out of it, but he wants him to keep on working on the SmackDown talent. So kind of alluding that maybe, I don't know, I guess Flair maybe is working for some trades behind the scene or something. So we'll see what that's all about maybe down the line. But we'll then go to the match that Jeff Hardy just got put into against Big Show, which is a rematch of the useless match that we had last week, which was really bad. And I'm not sure if this was going to be much better. Also, just randomly, we have Jackie as the special ref.
Yeah, that was out of nowhere. I was going to ask you if that was a thing or.
No. Apparently, Jackie is just I was going to say a jack of all trades. I guess she could be a Jackie of all trades, because last week they had her dancing to the Union Underground. Now she's just a ref randomly, and it's like it doesn't play into the match at all either. Like it has no bearing. Yeah. She doesn't become part of their little feud they have going on or anything. She's just there. It's just so weird. Like
so random.
What's the point? but anyway, it's the same stuff we got last week. Like show with kind of mostly he does a few decent power moves, but it's a lot of like chokes, like foot chokes. He does the stomps and walking over Jeff's chest and stuff like that. Jeff finally manages the jawbreaker, but then he gets thrown out of the ring, which is a pretty nasty bump. He just gets tossed. But Jeff moves at one point and Show nails the post. Show has a chair and Jeff kicks it into his face, which knocks Show out the ring, and we get actually a count out win for Jeff. Not a whole lot to this win. I think the stuff when Show was on top was not really impressive. It was kind of just lazy, boring. I call it like boring giant offense. just only won a star on this one. It wasn't impressed by this match, Matt.
Yeah, I went a star on it too. This was a match that happened on the show. That was pretty much the only note I had. The only other thing I had was I did like the bump that Show took over the guardrail when Hardy hit drop kicked the chair. I thought that was pretty good. But yeah, this was complete filler, and yeah, it was like I said, a match that happened.
Yeah, I think it's like amplified too, knowing that they just had pretty much the same match last week. I'm not seeing like a reason to continue this. Like, I don't think it's building in some great feud. And then Show like angrily prances around the ring like a fool after after his loss here.
Fantastic. The way he's stomping around the ring, like, yeah. My God.
Yeah, like fucking King Kong. It's ridiculous. Anyway, we'll move on. So we have the Houston Texans in the house. I was thinking, you would probably know this too. I want to say this was the year. Was 2002 when the Texans were like created? Was that what you experienced?
This was their first season, I believe.
Yeah. So the newly minted Houston Texans in the house, and And we get a close-up shot of David Carr, the star quarterback of the Houston Texans.
Using the term star quarterback very loosely.
Which is funny because they've been spending this whole time telling us not to watch football. And they're like, hey, look, football players, look how cool they are.
I know, right?
Don't you love football?
I had the same thought. Like, you spend half of the show telling people not to switch over to Monday Night Football, and then you show football players in the crowd. Kind of counterproductive, wouldn't you think?
I think if this was, like, a couple years ago, they might have had the balls to be like, you know, like, crap on them. Because David Carr, King would be like, yeah, those football players and our real athletes, like, as they're showing David Carr. But instead, they play nice. All right, we head backstage. We have Booker, who confronts Jericho about calling him a loser. And he says tonight he's going to – said eventually he's going to whip Jericho's ass. Jericho pretty much trolls him and then says that Booker T is lucky that he doesn't have a match tonight. And I should mention also that Jericho cuts off the five-time spiel that Booker usually does, which, of course, pisses off Booker T. But we should keep that in mind because it will come up in a little while. Mm-hmm. All right, and then we'll head to – I guess what I thought would have been our main event, but you mentioned it earlier, Matt, but we have our, I guess, mid-show main event, which is going to be a world title match. So again, the odds of somebody winning the title randomly in the middle of Raw seem pretty minuscule. But anyway, Bubba's going to get his title shot after what happened last week. He sets up a table before the match even starts, and he grabs the mic and says that he will be known as more than a tag wrestler, that this is about the guys in the back and the fans who don't have things handed to them, like Triple H got handed this title. Which I don't mind. Here's the thing. If it wouldn't be Bubba, it would be anybody who maybe like you felt like was a threat or felt like it was more natural coming out of them, I think his whole spiel, the theme of it, is not bad.
Yep.
It's just, like, this would have been the thing for RVD to do.
Yep.
Like, I feel like this should have been RVD's thing, and it would have worked because he's good enough to be taken seriously as the guy saying that. But for Bubba, it's like, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. You know he's going to lose. It's not going to happen. So it's like you don't buy him.
Mm-hmm. I had the exact same point. Like, it was a pretty good promo. The problem was it was 2002 Bubba Ray. Like, he had as much of a chance of winning the world title in 2002 as you or I did. You know, like... Yeah. And, I mean, he actually got the crowd behind him a little bit, which is impressive because this crowd was kind of, and I mean, given what they've seen, who can blame them? They were kind of like struggling a little bit by this point, kind of waning. And he kind of got the crowd behind him a little bit, which was impressive given who he was. But, yeah, if it was anybody else, I think it really would have worked. But the problem was it was Bubba Ray.
Yeah, you have a guy who, like, a month ago, JR was, like, making fat jokes about him saying that.
Right.
Like when they're in Philly, he's saying like, oh, I bet he was eating some cheesesteaks. And now we're supposed to think he's like the, you know, the voice of the underprivileged, like the guy who's for the blue collar wrestlers in the back. It just doesn't work. And to your point, too, the crowd is into it because I do think Triple H is getting over as a heel. Mm-hmm. I think his whole thing with being gifted the title in this whole heel run he's having right now, he is over. It's just he needs valid competition, or when he has valid competition, he has to treat him as such. But anyway, we'll get into the match. So Bubba is, of course, fired up. So he gets a little early flurry, but of course, Flair plays a factor here, laying in some cheap shots on the outside, which allows Triple H to get into control. But Bubba is kind of fighting back with the right hands. Flair comes in. He takes the Flair bump, of course. So we're really establishing coming off the pay-per-view that Flair is going to be kind of a pretty heavy factor in these Triple H matches as champion. We get a Bubba bomb, but the ref is distracted by Flair, which allows Triple H to go for the pedigree. Bubba reverses the pedigree, but Flair again distracts, and Triple H ends up nailing the pedigree this time to win. It was an okay match. I thought Bubba played a decent babyface in this, even if he really didn't. Like, they never got to the Jeff Hardy Taker level where you really – there was no point where it really felt like it was in danger, but the crowd was behind him. I thought he played the role decently well. I really felt like the biggest point of this match was to just establish Flair as the manager, because, like, you know, we had the turn at the pay-per-view, and then last week Flair was tagging with him, so you don't really get to see Flair as the manager. I feel like this was to really show you that anybody who's going to have to go through Triple H is going to have to deal heavily with Flair being a lot of outside interference and that sort of thing. But I kind of went down the middle on it, man. I went 2.5. I thought it was decent, But I think it hurt the match that you never really had any real drama building to it, because they never got you to really bite on anything that Bubba was going to win at any point.
Right. The biggest thing for me about this, the Flair interference bugged the hell out of me during this match, I'll be honest. Like, I don't think it helps Triple H any that he needs Ric Flair's constant interference in a 7-minute match to beat a guy like Bubba Ray. Like, I don't think that hurts Triple H. Like, do you want him to be some sort of Harley Race cosplayer, which he totally was during this match?
Yes.
With the sleeper hold, the high knee, the flip over the ropes. Like, do you want him to be that type of champion, or do you want him to be something like a Honky Tonk Man who need to a higher degree, obviously, but someone who needs to rely on interference and shenanigans to win his matches? And especially, you had Bubba Ray getting a visual pin on Triple H during this match. How does that help Triple H when he gets pinned by Bubba Ray Dudley when the referee is knocked down? I don't know. It just, like, that didn't make sense to me. And I mean, in a way, it kind of helped Bubba Ray a little bit because of the, you know, the rah-rah cheerleader promo, but I don't think it really helped him all that much either, because he loses to Triple H in 7 minutes. It kind of makes him look like a chump after, you know, oh, I'm going to do it for the fans after, you know, 10 years and all this stuff going on. And then he gets kick wham pedigree and he's done in, you know, 6.5, 7 minutes. So, I just think the match itself was technically fine, but I think the booking and everything surrounding it, the interference, all that stuff, is kind of ridiculous. And they need to pick what type of champion they want Triple H to be. Do they want him to be dominant, or do they want him to be something like a Honky Tonk Man who has to rely on interference and outside stuff? So I went 2 stars for the whole thing. I wasn't expecting much out of this match, and this kind of met that expectation, so I didn't hate it, I guess. But and the other thing too, because I had to look, because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Raw is not exactly top heavy right now. Just look at it. You just had Bubba Ray with a title shot. they were actually Triple H and Bubba Ray was actually headlining house shows at around this point for Raw. So that pretty much says all you need to know about the state of Monday Night Raw's roster right now, is that Triple H and Bubba Ray were headlining house shows. So,
you know, I kind of think I haven't looked ahead in the news in the Meltzers, but I mean, and he may not cover it. Who knows? It might not even come up. But I really get the idea that maybe that's what they were going to run with to No Mercy. Is this Bubba Triple H feud. And I really think it was the table thing from the previous week that I think Triple H did that doesn't work for me, brother, after that. When Bubba botched the table thing and, like, threw him on the corner of the table and almost, like, stabbed him in the back with it. So I think that this was their way of kind of being like, well, we'll just go out there, beat him, and we'll move on to something else.
You know, the other thing I was thinking, too, is Bradshaw was hurt at this point, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I half wonder if this spot was meant for Bradshaw. Because they were kind of trying to build him up over the summer and whatnot. Like, and then he gets hurt, and I don't know if they necessarily had a plan in place, hence Bubba Ray Dudley getting a title shot. But I half wondered if this was meant for Bradshaw.
Yeah, and one issue, too, is that he's only has so many faces on Raw right now to work with. Mm-hmm. And he just ran through RVD in like a month, which could have easily been a multi pay-per-view feud, like a big feud or something. But they just rolled through RVD so quickly. And, like, honestly, kind of, he just kind of got shunted down pretty quick, almost like amazingly fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like they're just having to run through any faces that they have to work with on Raw. And they're going to go through Bubba in a week, it seems like. But yeah, it is. It's a good point, though. Like you're saying, it's almost like they want to have their cake and eat it, too, where he's, you know, Jack Briscoe meets Harley Race, but then he also has, like, a heel manager helping him all the way through. So it's just want to do all that. But yeah, so it seems this Bubba Triple H feud, for whatever reason, you know, for probably multiple reasons. Last thing I'll say, too, is I have a feeling, and I try not to buy too much in the Triple H. I try not to not come back to all the time, but I would not be shocked if the Bubba Bomb thing was so Triple H could say, like, well, you know, I'll let him get a visual pin. You know, it's the same thing, like with the RVD thing. It can always come back and be like, you know, and say like, well, it's not like I buried him or anything. I mean, he got the visual pin on me. I mean, yeah. I ran through him in a week, and you know.
I mean, especially at this point, knowing what we know about Triple H during this period, something like that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll see what Triple H has something new on the docket, as we'll see at the end of the show. We'll have a new contender very soon. But anyway, we head backstage where we see Trish, but she is immediately jumped by Victoria, who throws her over some tables, and they kind of brawl around backstage. Actually, rips her shirt off, leaves her in her bra mat. But I thought this is a pretty solid little beatdown. They kind of scrap around for a minute or two, but it was pretty vicious. Victoria throwing Trish around, throwing into, you know, all the various crap that they had backstage. But I thought it was a pretty good little backstage beatdown.
Yeah, really good stuff. You know, we'll see it when we get to the match in a minute, that you could already see the chemistry between these two, like, right away. So, and yeah, really good stuff, and ends up being a really, really fun feud that kicks off. So
yep, so we'll head to the match. It's gonna be Trish versus Victoria, and of course Trish is a little hobbled after what happened to her in the back, and so we get a hot start. She comes in super hot and pissed off after what Victoria did to her, and man, that to me, and she continues to show it, it really showed through, because in a singles match you could see in the triple threat last week, but man, Victoria's just super athletic. In the early going, everything Trish is trying to do, it just doesn't work because Victoria is just too powerful and too athletic, which is a cool, kind of a cool dynamic in these women's matches that I haven't really seen lately with these. Like, even the feud with Molly. Molly was good, but she was kind of on the same, like, physically kind of the same as Trish. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, this is kind of Trish is almost like the underdog, smaller person in the match. So a lot of fast-paced action, a lot of good reversals. I love that. Moonsault by Victoria is always really awesome. But they actually end up brawling outside, and Victoria cracks Trish with the chair for the DQ. But I'm with you. I thought this was pretty good stuff. The DQ, I thought, didn't feel hokey. It felt pretty earned because the way they had built it up backstage, it kind of just felt like it just kind of boiled over with the aggression between the two. It's almost like they just fell back into the backstage brawl they had earlier. And like, it was a very physical match. So, yeah, I was digging it. Even if it was short, I liked what they did in the time they were given. I went 2.5, man.
I'm right there with you, 2.5 for this. Just a really, really fun sprint, really fun brawl. The flip leg drop Victoria does when she springboards in, I always love that move. They both work their asses off in the backstage segment, in the match. The chair shot Victoria crushed Trish with was absolutely brutal, just really clocked her with it. Like, the chair was upside down too, so like, she hit her with like the upside down end of the chair, like, just real nasty stuff. And like I said before, you could already see the chemistry these two had, so yeah, right there with you, 2.5.
Yeah, I have my fingers crossed that they don't screw this feud up with some dumb shit like they did with Molly and Trish, so I'll pray for him. All right, we head backstage where we see Eric Bischoff admiring the Raw roulette wheel, which will be in place next week. Stacy comes in. She wants to speak with Eric Bischoff about getting some more airtime. And he really kind of doesn't care what she has to say. It just goes into his whole spiel about the wheel. He explains the concept of the Raw roulette and says that next week every match will have a stipulation, since they're going to be in Vegas, and they will spin the wheel to figure out the stipulations. And so Stacy could have a match with Trish next week if she wants to be featured, but they won't know with so it could be any stipulation. It could be a bra and panties match. It could be an HLA match, whatever the hell that means. So it's just them hyping up the Raw roulette, you know, the unpredictability, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And then we also get here a lot of like, football, you won't see this on football. You won't see Stacey Cooper and Trish in HLA match on football. Roulette, not football. Don't watch football.
It was so, like I said, just throughout this entire show, like, was Monday Night Football, like, did they get crushed by Monday Night Football the week before? Like, that was the only thing I could think of for them to bring it up literally at least once a segment. They bring up, don't change the channel, don't watch Monday Night Football, you're going to want to stay here and see what we're going to do. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, if it was a company mandate by Vince, or if they got crushed in the ratings. Like, it's just, it's so weird. And I know you'll get into it later, but it's not like it was, I mean, it was a decent game, But it's not like, it wasn't like it was a Super Bowl match or anything, you know?
No, that wasn't it. I think it's probably because their ratings have been dropping a little bit in this time period. And you definitely get the sense of them get it, you know, like sometimes when Vince feels like threatened and stuff, he kind of goes into this very, which to me, it just doesn't even make sense. Because if I'm somebody who is even a mild fan of football and you keep putting him ahead and be like, oh yeah, let me go check the football. Like you're just reminding me of football.
Yeah.
Or like people who don't want to watch football are just not going to watch it. Like they don't.
Right.
You know, like Sean Kitt, they don't watch football, you know. Like you don't have to convince him. And then if it is somebody who halfway cares, they're just going to keep checking it. So I'm not a marketing genius or anything, but doesn't seem like an effective tactic. But anyway, we head backstage. We have the Odd Americans who are continue to implode here. And Regal says that he and Tess are going to show them what Harmony's about. So the Regal still trying to save the Un-Americans. We now go to Flair, who is with the coach, tells coach they're parting after their big win over Bubba Ray. Matt, they're celebrating like, you know, they just won a big title fight. There are ladies in the shower. The ladies are in the shower. Triple H is in his towel. So really trying to push Triple H as like living the like 80s Flair lifestyle here as the champion. Jericho comes in and tells Flair they have something to tells Triple H he has something to discuss. Triple H says that he's busy. Jericho makes some jokes about like you need to get some blood flow going to your head because I have something to talk to you about. And so Triple H tells him to give him a minute, and Jericho sits down with one of the ladies and gushes brags about how he's a big rock star. So Jericho plotting something with Triple H apparently. What do you think of big ladies man Triple H living the life of the champ?
I mean, when you have a big win over a guy like Bubba Ray, I mean, 7 minutes, I mean, even though you eat a pin, you still have to celebrate. But my one note that you haven't mentioned is the woman sitting next to Jericho on the couch. I was very concerned for her well-being because she had a very large vein popping out of her forehead. And like by the end of the segment, it was all I could stare at. Like, I don't know if she was like nervous or like it was down her forehead. Like I was very, very concerned that she was going to have some sort of trouble on that couch. But basic stuff here. Triple H rapidly turning into 1985 Ric Flair,
which is a weird. I don't know. I don't know if that works for him.
No.
I don't know. If it's he's a cerebral assassin, but then he's also like the play. She's trying to do it all. I don't know. But
I mean, yeah. Just, who knows? Just because you roll with Ric Flair doesn't make you Ric Flair.
Yeah. And the vein, maybe a Flair, maybe they went full 80s and he gave her a little bit of the yayo.
Like yeah. It was
1985. Anyway, all right, we'll head to the ring where we'll see if the Un-Americans can turn their fortunes around. We'll have Regal and Tess versus RVD and Dreamer, which, again, this is what RVD is doing now, which is lame. I mean, even before his feud with Triple H, he was like IC champ, and now he's teaming with Tommy Dreamer, who was drinking his own piss like a month ago to face, you know, the kind of the B tier of the Un-Americans, the guys for the Un-Americans who weren't even tag champs. So kind of a fall for RVD, if you ask me. This kind of, I don't know, kind of sucks. But RVD still has the rib tape going on, so he wears the rib tape to the ring. They go after his ribs, as you would. We get a funny comment here from JR during this match where, as Bischoff was talking about the Raw Roulette, he says something about, hey, we might get a coal miner's glove match, was a nice little reference to spin the wheel, make the deal.
Yes.
Good little JR reference there. But he used a kick to get out of it and hit the hot tag to Dreamer. Dreamer comes in, he counters the pump handle, and RVD cracks Tess with a super kick for the win. And so the Un-Americans take another loss. I went 2 stars. I thought it was just a decent little match. Like I said, it was a lot of RVD's the face in peril with his hurt ribs. Dreamer comes in and gets the advantage. RVD comes back in and gets the win. Un-American stock rapidly declining.
Yeah.
But I went 2. It was fine.
Yeah, I went 2.25 on it. really fast paced match. Felt kind of had a very Nitro feel to mm-hmm. it, where it was like really quick. It was like maybe, I don't know, did it even go 5 minutes? It was really mm-hmm. quick, nonstop action. There was a lot of miscommunication by the Un-Americans in this match. And I mean, this was the match that kind of solidified to me that the Un-Americans are cooked. Like, if you're losing a match to Tommy Dreamer at the end of 2002, the writing's on the wall for you. So, but yeah, fun match. So 2.25.
Yeah, they went about as far as, because after the match, the Un-Americans all run in and they just all start fighting with each other. It's mm-hmm. like they could have just had like a big neon sign, like, this team, this faction is breaking up. Like, I mean, it couldn't have been more like they are like hyper speeding this breakup totally. Of them throughout yep. this night. And then not only that, they start fighting with each other, and then RVD and Dreamer like knock them out anyway. So then they really look like some idiots, like
make them look even worse.
Yeah, they all just get knocked out. Like they have to break them up now because they're yeah. just they look like fools. All right, we'll go to our main event now, which will be our IC title / number one contenders match, because this person will face Triple H at No Mercy. So Jericho comes in and his offense is initially pretty futile against Kane's power. We then get Flair coming out to ringside, so it makes it seem as if Flair is coming out because of the conversation he and Jericho had earlier. He starts to assist Jericho a little bit, like Kane hits a power slam and goes for a pin, and Flair pulls Jericho's foot to the ropes where the ref can't see, so kind of saving Jericho, implying that Triple H does not want to have to face Kane. Maybe that Triple H is a little afraid of Kane. Kane chases Flair, which finally gives Jericho an opening. They go back in. Jericho gets some offense, but then he gets pressed to the outside. Jericho really takes a beating in this match. Like, that was a sick bump he just took right there. He just mm-hmm. gets pressed like flat outside. Big bump there. Kane, while that's happening, he goes and lays out Flair as Flair's getting ejected, so Flair will no longer be a factor. But again, buys Jericho a little bit of time. Jericho's actually able to get a superplex after he actually kicks the ref into Kane and crotches the ref, which I thought was a pretty shrewd little heel move right there, which allows him to get the superplex. Now he's going after the D, and Kane starts to be a little bit hobbled as Jericho's working over his knee. He slams the knee into the steps. He does the Bret Hart figure four on the ring post. So I really like Jericho, this whole sequence when I'm going after the D. I thought he was really good at it. It looked pretty vicious. But then Kane kind of turns a little bit. He takes a big Jericho takes another big bump as he gets he does like the suplex. He goes to suplex Kane back in, and Kane reverses it and suplexes Jericho out of the ring. So Jericho taking a lot of big bumps in this one again, taking a lot of bumps to the outside. Now, this is the point, because at this point, they're still going on, even as the show's like coming to a close. Even here, they're still talking about football. Like, oh, you won't mm-hmm. see this on football. No halftime here. No halftime. And so the game that we've been alluding to, it was Denver at Baltimore, which again, these were not, Baltimore, yeah. I think, had some notoriety coming off the Super Bowl a few years ago, but right. neither of these teams, I think, even made the playoffs this year.
No, this was mm-hmm. Chris Redmond's Baltimore Ravens against Brian Greasy's Denver Broncos. So yeah. You're not talking, Brady Manning here.
But it is famous. This game is famous because it's the Chris McAllister 107-yard. I think it was a field goal return, actually, right? It was like they missed the field goal and he returned it.
So yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if the record's still there, but I know at the time it was the longest play in NFL history, which it might still be. I'm not sure. I'm gonna have to look it up. But that was the big game. So like you said, Matt, it was. I mean, it has that one moment, but it's not like it was some marquee matchup at this point. Like, but anyway, just to let you know what they're so worried about. But it's like there's no halftime here. Like, that's what you hate when you're watching a football game. It's like, God, I wish they would get rid of this halftime. I hate it. Ridiculous. All right, back to the match. Jericho recovers, and he's back at the knee again. Kane starts to make a little bit of a comeback, which one kind of issue I had in this match a bit was, like, Kane, he sells the knee. Like, when he's walking around, he kind of hobbles around, but it never really, like, affects him at any point. Like, it doesn't really affect any of his offense, I find. He moves a little bit slower, but when he actually goes to do any kind of moves, it never really stops him. So, it's a minor thing, but I think it would have elevated the match if it would have actually gotten in the way of his offense, maybe. But anyway, Jericho flies over the ring post and gets thrown to the steps again. Again, he's getting his ass kicked a lot in this one. He barely kicks out of a flying clothesline, and now Triple H walks down. Kane goes for the choke slam, and Jericho counters that and nearly gets into the walls, but Kane's able to escape. Jericho pulls the rope and dumps Kane out and spine busters him. Kane is able to get back in. Jericho has the missile dropkick, chair to the knee as Triple H distracts. Jericho hits Kane in the knee with the chair. So really, the odds are really being stacked against Kane, which is a weird, it's an odd thing to see, like an odd role for Kane, I find, to be like this super underdog babyface. I think it worked out okay, but it's just, it's not something you usually think of with him. But he gets put in the walls after this, and you're thinking that's probably going to be it for him. McCain escapes that. Jericho comes with the chair again and eats a boot to the face as Kane boots the chair into his face and then gets the choke slam. And then Kane wins it for the IC title and the number one contender spot. So a lot going on this match. Got quite a bit of time too, Matt. About 20 minutes, which is kind of out of the norm for a Raw main event. They usually don't get a ton of time. But so a big marquee match between two star guys. What did you think of this as a kind of like your main event on this show?
Yeah, so it's funny that you just mentioned that it went 20 minutes, because I think that was the biggest problem I had with the match was the fact that it went 20 minutes. You mentioned all the legwork. To me, it felt like the legwork was just there to extend the match. Like it didn't really end up going anywhere. It was just kind of doing it for the sake of doing it. And I think had they tightened up the match a little bit more and kept a snappier pace, like the beginning of the match I thought was good. The end of the match I thought was good. It was really that stretch in the middle that I think kind of dragged it down for me. Like even all the Ric Flair stuff and the Triple H stuff didn't really bug me because they're involved, you know, they're directly involved with whoever wins this match. So it makes sense that they would get involved. Like I said, I like the beginning. I like the ending. Jericho really did work his ass off in this match. He took a beating from Kane. Like you mentioned, that press slam to the floor was nasty. Triple H at one point hit maybe the worst looking belly to belly / spine buster / whatever the fuck that was to Kane on
belly
the floor.
Buster.
Belly buster, spine, whatever. That looked pretty rough, but... yeah, it ended up turning into a decent match. I was a little nervous there that had the middle just ended like right after all that legwork, I would have been really down on it. But I think they picked it up enough at the end to hit at least decent territory for me. So I ended up going 2.5 on the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm a tad higher. I went 3 on it, but I have similar thoughts on it. I feel like it had like the makings of a better match, but it just, a few things got in the way, like you said. And I almost like, it's probably a bit too long. I think Kane could have probably, if they would have made the knee a little bit more relevant to what was going on, like you said, it was well done by Jericho, but it honestly didn't really matter that much. Mm-hmm. Like it did make him, like his knees didn't buckle when he was going for the choke slam or anything. It was just him kind of hobbling around every now and then, but it didn't really affect much. It was like good, but didn't get anywhere past good for me. Like it almost feels like like they almost went to give Kane like a warm-up main event match. If he's going to be having a title match on paper, you're like, hey, go out there for 15-20 minutes and see what you can do. Which, and I think they did an okay of him like overcoming the odds, but to me, Jericho was the MVP of this whole thing. He was working his ass off, like both and getting his ass beat, and when he was on offense, like he was really going out there, and like to me, he carried this match. To me, he was the highlight by far, which makes me a little nervous, because if we got to 2.5 and 3 with Jericho Kane, the way Triple H kind of does his matches in this era makes me a little nervous. But
yeah,
we'll see what happens. But so overall thoughts. So we end on that with the big babyface win for Kane and sets up Kane and Triple H as a feud. But anyway, overall, I thought this was better than last week. I like the main event better. But still not great for me with this Raw. Like, it just doesn't really seem like a whole lot's going on this show. Like, it just seems like a lot of filler. Like, if you were to say the main things going on, it's, you know, Triple H and who's going to be the number one contender, and then the Un-Americans breaking up. I guess you get the Trish stuff, but it just feels like a lot of stuff is just, I don't know. It doesn't seem super focused to me, is my main issue. So I went a little bit under average. I went 4.5 out of 10, man.
Yeah, I went 4 out of 10, and the biggest thing I noticed, like I've been mentioning the whole time we've been talking about this Raw, is just how glaring the roster is, and how they really don't have a lot of, like, they have a good mid card talent, arguably too much mid card talent, but boy, their main event scene really isn't great. When you have, you know, Kane, who's fine and he is a main eventer, but when you have Kane getting a main match and Bubba Ray Dudley getting a world title match, and yeah, there's just you have Booker T, but he's in a tag team. You have, you know, Jeff Hardy, who's Jeff Hardy, and I don't know. It just seems like the lack of main eventers on the Raw roster was really striking to me. You know, it was a fairly wrestling heavy show, but unfortunately the wrestling wasn't exactly the best, and I feel like most of the non-wrestling segments were pretty rough. And by the end of this show, if I heard Monday Night Football one more time, I was gonna cut myself. So 4.5.
Yeah, it was it's not very focused. I'm with you. And they're not doing themselves any favors by having a guy like RVD, who was pretty hot, and now he just kind of seems like another guy. So when you already kind of don't have the deepest roster, which is kind of the downside of the brand split that you're kind of seeing with Raw, is, you know, they don't have everybody at their disposal. So, and they haven't really done a great job of using everybody, I think, to their potential. Because I think they do have, you know, it's not loaded, but they do have some good guys. It's just a lot of them are kind of not doing much. I mean, you know, even like a Jeff Hardy, I mean, I'm not saying he should be in the main event, but he could probably do him better than doing shitty matches with Big Show.
And he's a popular guy. I mean, say what you want about him. I mean, the crowd loves him even still. So, I mean,
yeah. So we'll see, as we said, the tale of two shows as we move into SmackDown. So we'll go to the October 3rd O2 SmackDown, which is going to be live from the Cajun Dome, right around my neck of the woods in Lafayette, Louisiana. And so we start with this kind of intro thing with Stephanie, which I thought was good. And it's like the content of it was good. Like, it's kind of, you know, like we're just saying, Raw, I was saying, like, Raw not having focus right from the get-go. SmackDown lets us know, like, what the major feuds are, what's coming up on the show, like, what happened last week, like, really focusing us in on everything that's going on. Now, the voice effects were a little bit much for me with all the, like, so Stephanie with the, like, tonight, like, they kept doing all that shit, which was, got a little bit grating after a while, but I like the content of it, I guess I'll say.
Yeah, I agree. Just already, right off the bat, like, this is something Raw could have done to kick off their show. It makes SmackDown already stand out from Raw as being entirely different. And, you know, like you said, the production was a little much, but the point of it was welcome.
Yeah, like, we have, you know, Taker and you know, Taker's be facing Matt Hardy. We're going to have a tag tournament. You know, we have all this stuff going on. It kind of focuses you in on what's going on. So I thought it was effective. But anyway, we go into the, as SmackDown is known to do, we start off, we go right into a match, which is going to be, they still are not calling them Los Guerreros, but I'm going to call them Los Guerreros, Chavo and Eddie. And they're going to be facing Mark Henry and Rikishi. So a big, big beefy team there of Rikishi and Mark Henry. And this is going to be a first round match in this tag tournament. So to start off, the Guerreros can't really get much of anything as they keep getting popped around by the big men. Some nice bumping by them, of course, until finally Chavo clips Mark's legs whenever he's going to press slam Eddie. And Chavo does like kind of a chop block thing, goes after him. And then after that, they are all over Mark Henry's leg, just brutalizing his leg. At one point, Rikishi gets pissed, which I thought this was good, man. It's such good you know, psychology or whatever you want to call it. It's like, so they just keep on going after Henry, and Rikishi gets frustrated because they're using underhanded tactics. He gets pissed, which of course distracts the ref a little bit, which allows Chavo to come in and just hammer Mark Henry in the leg with the chair. Like, it was a sick chair shot right to his leg. It was really well done, and which allows Eddie to come in and tap him with a half crab. So I thought it was a cool twist too, because you're constantly thinking that Mark Henry's going to get the hot tag to Rikishi, but he never does. They just hobble him and eventually wear him down to the point where he has to tap. And I think you would maybe think, like, you know, Mark Henry tapping or them working over his leg when he's such a monster. But I think they did enough, and I think the chair helped get it over that they had done enough damage to his knee. You know, I think maybe if there was just like working the leg like normal, you might not buy it because his legs are like tree trunks. But I think they did enough, and it's Mark Henry. He's not positioned. Maybe like his appearance does not match his positioning, if that makes any sense. Like, he's not as strong you know, his character, I guess, is not as strong as what he would look. Like, he loses pretty easily, honestly. But anyway, I went 2.5 on. I like the twist of not having the hot tag, and I just liked how vicious the Guerreros were in attacking Mark Henry in this one.
Yep, I went 2.5 on it as well. Like you mentioned, I think the chair shot really added to it, like you mentioned. You know, if it was the Guerreros just really working on Henry's leg, I don't think it would have worked. But the chair, I think, kind of put it over the top. And it's funny that you said what you said about Mark Henry, because I completely forgot that he was a part of the roster in 2002. Like, he doesn't really do anything. He's just there. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of... floating aimlessly, I guess. I mean, the team with Rikishi is cool, and I kind of wish that would stick around, because that's a pretty neat team. But I enjoyed the match overall. I like the angle. I like that the chair shot to the leg led to the win with the submission hold. I like that made sense. So really fun stuff. Great heel work from the Guerreros. 2.5 for me.
Yeah, Henry's weird in that, like, you see him and he comes out and he looks like a beast, but in all of his matches, like, you know, he might get some stuff in, and, like, you know, if it's a smaller guy, he might throw him around a bit, but he usually loses. Like, he really doesn't.
Yeah.
He's like a beast jobber to the stars, basically.
It was weird to see. And this was a pretty quick match, too. I mean, like, three, 4 minutes, so that was kind of surprising to see this, the team of girth lose that quickly.
Yeah. But I think they executed it well enough for, you know, they made it convincing because they were so vicious and, like we said, the chair shot. So anyway, but they'll advance in the tournament. So we head backstage, and Tori is back there with her father, Al Wilson. So this is going to be a historic moment, Matt, our introduction to the famous Al Wilson. And Dawn Marie is there because they're going to be competing in a bikini contest later. And Dawn Marie... I'll say it now, but the Michael Cole later in the show refers to as the sensual Dawn Marie. So the sensual Dawn Marie essentially introduces herself to Al Wilson here.
So Dawn sensual Marie making her entrance to the ring.
A harbinger of things to come. No pun intended. We now head to Brock and Heyman, who are... This is like a thing they've really been doing a lot. They did it on both shows last week. We see it again where they have like a TV set up with the VCR where we have Brock and Heyman watching this TV, watching some tape of their handiwork from last week on what they did to Undertaker. Heyman reveals that Steph is making a rematch. They can't get out of having a rematch with Taker, but she will not reveal what the stipulation is going to be. Matt Hardy comes in and says it won't be false count anywhere, because that's what the match he's about to have with Undertaker in just a minute. So we'll head to that match, which is, of course, Taker and Matt Hardy, false count anywhere. We start off with Taker just whipping Matt's ass, of course, throwing him around outside. He goes for the choke slam on the announce table, but Matt is able to narrowly avoid that by kicking Taker in the balls. They start brawling through the crowd, and they make their way backstage. And I love this part, Matt. So Matt Hardy just out of nowhere, like, he's just getting his ass beat, and he's like in the back area, and he just goes, he starts running away. He goes, "We'll meet again, Taker." I loved it. He's just like, he's so like, good. "You haven't seen the last of me." And he just runs away. It's just incredible. So he comes back after saying that and just starts randomly climbing a fence. So Taker goes after him. And of course, it was all just a big setup to get Brock to jump Taker. So Brock comes out. Taker actually gets a few shots on him and gets a little bit of advantage. Matt comes back, though, and gets a few shots in on Taker, which allows Brock to recover and hit the F5. Now, this was like two spots that were like night and day, because he does the F5 on like these giant bags of, I guess, popcorn.
It was popcorn.
It looked ridiculous. It was like he just threw them on the two pillows. He like F5'd them on these pillows. It looked ridiculous.
Fucking popcorn flying everywhere. It was a hell of a visual.
Yeah, it's It did not look brutal at all, but it allows Matt to get the pin. Just, it was a goofy ass spot. I mean, I get what this Incas Taker is like, look, I don't want to get F5'd on the cement, but I don't know. They could have done like a table crash pad, something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard for me to think of anything looking goofier than these fucking bags of popcorn. It was like TNA level, like ridiculousness. But I wish they would have got it. But the better spot comes after this. So after Matt actually wins the match, Brock comes in. He has like a propane tank, and he smashes into Taker's hand. And Taker's just like screaming bloody murder as Brock and everybody runs away. And he's just left kind of writhing in pain. The train. Well, we'll talk. We'll get to that after. But the match I went to, I thought it was a decent little brawl. It's a weird match to rate because it's honestly more of an angle because it's sort of them just, whether intentional or not, just kind of setting a trap for Taker and him getting beat up by Brock. But I thought the brawling part was okay, and I gave the whole package 2 stars.
Yeah, I did the same thing you did. As a match, it was fine, but as a segment, I thought it was really, really well done. I thought Taker did an awesome job selling that shot to the hand. I mean, and interesting to see Taker in a position that you don't see him in all that often, where he's like screaming in pain and whatnot. Really good stuff. The F5 to the popcorn is, I've thought about it at least once a day since I've watched it. It's so ridiculous. And like you said, like, even a gym mat, just something instead of popcorn, or at least make sure the popcorn bag is tied nice and tight so that when he falls on it, the popcorn doesn't go shooting everywhere.
Yeah, it looks like a whoopee cushion.
It was so ridiculous. But 2 stars for the whole thing.
Yeah, they redeemed her with the hand smashing. Like you said, it was done very well. It looked pretty legit. Like when he hit it, they were able to get a nice noise out of it. And like you said, Taker was just selling it like brutally. He was just writhing in pain. So Mark Lloyd comes up to him. A trainer's trying to speak with Taker, who kind of walks away. And Mark Lloyd asks the trainer, what does he think of it? And the trainer says he's not sure, but he believes it could be broken, and that he's going to try and get Taker to go to the hospital and get it checked out. So I thought this was well done, too. It seemed pretty spontaneous and legit feeling with him kind of like Taker kind of getting away and the trainer trying to catch him. I thought this whole part of it was done really well.
Yeah, really, really good stuff all around. And again, separates itself from Raw because I feel like SmackDown focuses more on like the realism type stuff, whereas Raw kind of goes kind of off the wall for a lot of things. And I think this just gives credence to that. I thought this was good stuff too.
Great. Good continued build of their feud, which has been well done. And I'm looking forward to where it goes. But we now head back to the ring for kind of a bit of a throwaway match here. It's going to be Jamie Noble versus Crash Holly, who honestly I've not seen in a very long time. I wasn't even sure if he was still around at this point. Or maybe if he was just over on Velocity or Heat at this point, but he's going to be facing our Cruiserweight champion, Jamie Noble. Taz says that I pop for this being, you know, from Louisiana, but Taz says that Nitty and Noble love Louisiana because of all the trailer parks they saw when they were driving in. So that popped me. Crash gets out of Noble goes for a camel clutch, but Crash is able to get out of it. He didn't get a ton of offense in this. This was just a quick match to get Noble a win. It was just, I would call it a smidge above a squash. Nitty distracts and Noble looked good as usual, kind of their standard MO in this one. He ends up winning with a roll-up. I want a star and a half on it. Just something to keep Noble in the back of our mind.
Yeah, I went 2 on it. Crash looking a little girthy during this during this match here. Again, another match I thought had a Nitro feel to it. You know how you'd see like a title match on Nitro against a random challenger, like when Goldberg would defend the U.S. title against like Sick Boy or something. It felt kind of like that to me. But I thought it was decent enough for what it was. Just a good solid title defense. You mentioned Taz earlier. Before this match, they start running through like promos and commercials and whatnot. For some reason, Taz saying, before the Silence of the Lambs, there was the Red Dragon.
Yes,
popped me huge. I don't know why, but I thought it was hysterical. Just Taz reading this freaking read from the new Hannibal movie. Like, it's so weird. But,
yes, that's great.
Just,
they also had a ring, I think, for the, I don't know if it was during this, but they also had a promo for the ring, which made me realize the ring is like 20 years old, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that, I remember that too. Also, Lugs, there was another Lugs commercial, which, again, I pop every time I see one of those. But yeah, just a good solid title defense, 2 stars.
Yeah, it was just kind of a little filler thing. And Noble, somebody can carry this. And it also, I think Noble and Nitty are a pretty hot act, so it's good to have them out there, and the fans are into their whole shtick. Anyway, we head to Mark Lloyd again. He's interviewing Kurt Angle. He asked Kurt about his offensive comments he made against Ray recently, and he said, Kurt says that part of being the best is never having to say you're sorry. Benoit lost, and he's going to lose again because Benoit is a regular person who makes mistakes. Unlike Kurt Angle, who is, sorry, didn't mean to hang on that one, but, anyway, Kurt Angle is perfection. He's like, he says he is a Mozart symphony, that he does not make mistakes. Edge walks up and they get a stare down. Edge says that he doesn't suck, but he is not perfect, even though Angle sucks. Kurt shows his medals and says this is how he knows that he is perfect. And then Edge says that his bald head would have him believe that he's not perfect because you beat him in that match. Kurt says he's been waiting since he shaved his head to get back at Edge. And Kurt walks away, but turns around and sucker punches Edge, right? So this is leading into their match that they're about to have. So a good segment. Kurt was fantastic as always. And I thought Edge held his own. I think Edge in this run, sometimes his promos come off a little corny, but I thought he felt okay in this one. He wasn't trying to play, I feel like, he wasn't going too heavy on the, like, Mr. Cool Guy stuff that I think sometimes makes him come off a little corny.
Yeah, I thought Edge held his own here. I really liked the back and forth exchange they had with the gold medals, and Edge saying that Angle's bald head is proof that he isn't perfect. I thought that was really good stuff and leading into the match. So, yeah, just a good, solid backstage segment.
All right, so we'll head to the match, which is going to be quite a beefy one. So Edge versus Angle. We start off, Angle goes to the wrist lock, Edge counters him with arm drag, and they kind of start this whole first segment with a lot of back and forth holds, kind of work on the mat. Edge is gaining a little bit of momentum, and they kind of play it off. And Edge is, I mean, I should say Taz is so good here with all this. I really love Taz in this whole run, but he's calling all the holds, but also explaining. Like, he points out here that this is kind of an unexpected development in early going. It's Edge is kind of out-wrestling Angle, who's supposed to be, like, the consummate wrestler. So I thought that was a cool twist. And I also like that it's a totally different vibe than what we saw out of their previous matches, and also the big brawl we had with the hardcore match with the no DQ match with Edge and Eddie, which was a lot of brawling and weapons and stuff, that they kind of start this one out with a little bit. They're not going straight to the spots and stuff like that. It's a lot of kind of jockeying for position, which I thought was cool. But finally, to change the tide, Angle Edge throws Angle's shoulder into the post, I should say. And then Angle, out of desperation, as Edge is starting to get a little momentum, he goes for an Angle slam and just throws Edge over the top. And that allows him a little bit of time to recover. Edge hurts his ribs on the way out, and so now Angle zeroes in on that. And I'm already loving the momentum swings in this one. I think are really good, and it's something they do really well throughout the rest of this match too. But it feels really earned anytime. Like, they do a lot of back and forth, but I find anytime one guy gets the advantage, there's a really good key spot to set it up. Like right here, you really feel like Edge is getting the advantage, but then Kurt dumps him, and then he gets a little bit of time to kind of catch a breather and you know, gain his bearings, which I thought was really well done. But anyway, we keep going. Now Angle's back in. He's really working over the ribs. He does the body scissors. Even this, I really like how they don't just break the hold, but Edge has to really power out of it. He has to slowly pull the legs apart. And now Angle goes back to the ab stretch, so really zeroed in on the ribs. And again, nice change of pace from last week's match. It's more about the holds and wearing each other down than any, you know, a lot of big spots, which is cool. We get a flash roll up by Edge, which allows him to get a little bit of momentum. But Angle goes back to the seated waist lock now to ground him to make sure he can't get any kind of advantage until Edge finally gets into a full fist, real flurry now, where he's actually chaining some moves together and the crowd is really getting behind him. But Angle is able to catch him, catches the spear, and goes into a belly to belly, which was a really awesome spot. Mm-hmm. into the ref. So the ref gets bumped. Edge managed to do the execution, but there's no ref, of course, so he can't do anything. Angle's able to recover. He gets an angle slam, but again, the second ref is coming to the ring, so there's a bit of a delay before the count, so that gives Edge enough time to recover and kick out. To kick out. We get an ankle lock, but that gets a rope break. Superplex for a pin, but both shoulders are down, and so we kind of get the double pin as Kyoto was the initial referee and Mike Sparks was the second referee. So they're kind of arguing over. They initially call it for Kurt, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it for Kurt, but Kyoto disagrees. I should get this whole weird deal where Kyoto gets pissed and just slaps the shit out of Mike Sparks, which seems a little unprofessional, but... anyway, and so Kyoto asked to have the match restarted at this point. And so Angle gets the early advantage as we go into this, I don't know what you call it, just the match restarting. So he wraps Edge in the ropes and spears him repeatedly. I thought that was a vicious, brutal spot. He's still going after the ribs, but it's one I haven't seen a bunch. Just like it just looked cool because just basically ramming him in the ribs, which I thought looked good. But of course, he goes for the first two, the rule of three. He misses the third, which he bails to the outside. He comes back in, eats a missile drop kick, and we get, I call it an angle near fall, where it's like, I mean, 2 and 15/16, just great. Angle has the best near falls, man. He's so good. It's just like at the last possible moment. So good. They then go into a nice reversal sequence for another near fall on Edge. They go to the Germans this time. Angle starts hitting the Germans. We now see Benoit start to walk down. Angle gets the ankle lock, but Edge kicks him out of it. As he's known to do, Angle finally gets frustrated. He goes for the chair. It backfires as Benoit kind of gets on the apron, distracts him. He does the good old Angle popping the chair into the ropes and smashing himself in the face, which allows Edge to get the pin. So, man, quite a match. I want to say this went, if you count the match being restarted and everything, this was a good 20, 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. So ton of time in this one. I'll let you speak, Matt, first, because that was quite a lot to go through. Quite a match.
Well, you did a great job going through it. Just awesome, awesome TV match. So many great spots. You know, the belly to bellies and, you know, the angle slams, the ankle locks, the submissions. Just everything about this was great and everything looked great, which I think is big for this match. And I mean, it's Kurt Angle. Of course, it's going to look great, mm-hmm. right? But just everything looked so crisp and on point. Nothing was sloppy. And like, this is the type of stuff, matches like this, that separated SmackDown from Raw at this point. You just flat out weren't seeing matches like this on Raw. You just weren't. I mean, that's just the fact. Raw could say that they were putting on matches like this, but they weren't. I mean, Angle was just, when he's kicking the shit out of Edge's ribs, I mean, he was mm-hmm. he was laying him in, and it just real, real good stuff. I can see why maybe, you know, people may not like it because of the double pin stuff with the referees. Like, I can see that knocking it, but I mean, it didn't really bother me all that much because it was a TV match. So, I mean, you half expect stuff like that, especially around this point. So, I mean, just an awesome, awesome TV match. Fits well within the other matches they had on pay-per-view. Just as good as those, maybe even better than some of them. Who knows? I'd have to rewatch those again. But, even the finish with the Benoit stuff didn't really bug me all that much. Again, for the same reasons, because it's a TV match. I went 4 stars on this. Really good stuff.
Yeah, same thing for me. I went 4-2. And I think the Benoit stuff works because it's playing into the feud, because Angle and Benoit are feuding. So it's kind of like you still, you know, you get to have this awesome match, but you still want to push along the angles and the feuds that you have going on, because you don't want it to just be don't just have these great matches that mean nothing. So it kind of plays into that. Yeah, it was just super physical. They had, like I mentioned while I was going through it, just great momentum swings, like as each guy would get the advantage. It was back and forth, but it never felt like they were just trading moves. Mm-hmm. They had the psychology of the going after the ribs, like when Edge hurts his ribs and that sort of thing. And like you said, everything just looks fantastic. Like even basic stuff that that like Angle does always looks fantastic. And even when he's doing stuff like the ab stretch, you know, he hurt the ribs, so it makes sense. He's wrenching mm-hmm. it in. It kind of gets you invested in things that you would maybe think were just wrestle. So really awesome stuff. And again, SmackDown is just rolling at this point. Just kind of throwing out these like 4-star matches on TV like it's nothing and giving it time, and it was awesome. But we now head backstage for the aftermath. Angle's looking for Benoit because he's pissed. He sees him. He goes after him. Everyone in the locker room ends up stopping them, holding them back. Stephanie comes in pissed off that they're going after each other and does the good old making them partners deal, where if they can't get along, she's going to make them get along because they are now going to be partners in the tag tournament. And just a great little angle touch here. He goes, Kurt, like, starts to calm down. He goes, okay, fine, no touching. And then he just lays in a punch on Benoit, like one last sucker punch. Just fantastic. Okay, no touching. And he just hits him. I love him. So great. So great. So we have the reluctant tag partners coming. So we'll see how it plays out with them. We now go to Paul Heyman, who is giving Brock a pep talk to hype him up. And Matt says that after what happened to Taker, if Taker can't make the match, maybe Matt should be the one that gets the title shot at No Mercy. And so Heyman and Brock humor him, but pretty much laugh at him once he leaves. So delusional Matt continues.
Yeah, the right response to Matt Hardy wanting a title shot at No Mercy, I'd say. So he is the better Hardy, but come on.
Yeah, he's done a good job with this whole like delusional character. Mm-hmm. Like this Brock and Taker being like the weird third wheel in this is really a work for him. I think it's really helped him, like, it's really gotten over his new character. I mean, and you could say he is sort of just a dummy in this, but mm-hmm. I mean, he is featured in the world title feud, and I think it's getting his character over, so good for him.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
All right, we will now go to a another, I believe, I didn't put it down, but I guess this is part of the tag tournament too. But we have mm-hmm. Billy and Chuck, who are looking much less distinctive now. They're just kind of wearing, they don't have matching tights anymore. They kind of have dropped their whole Billy and Chuck aesthetic. I mean, they're still together, but they're just kind of, they don't have the music anymore. They just kind of have generic music. And they are going to be facing, apparently, the new form team of Devon and Farouk, which the even commentary is, okay, so I laughed throughout this whole thing because Taz and Cole like try to figure out what is the connection between Farouk and Devon. It's like, I think we know why the company did this, guys. Unfortunately, we know what they were doing. It's like, I don't know what the connection is doing. Yeah, we don't know the connection either because we know why you put them together. Mm-hmm. Because we have never seen this team at all. Devon's kind of ramped. He's kind of still a little bit in Reverend Devon mode, but he's kind of toned it down a bit. So, anyway, they question Farouk as to why he's getting with Billy and Chuck kind of question Farouk as to what his motivations were for getting with Devon. He, instead of answering him, he just hits him in the face. Basic formula tag match here with Chuck is getting the gets as the face in peril. He gets a hot tag to Billy. But Devon and Farouk actually cut off the hot tag a little bit, or cut off his little comeback, and they hit the spine buster and actually pin Billy. So, yeah, they pretty bye-bye Billy and Chuck. They just kind of got smushed a little bit here. I went two as a basic tag match. I thought Devon and Farouk were okay for what they did. There are a few interesting spots. I like Devon and Farouk using the tag rope. That was a nice little old school move to choke Chuck. I thought that was pretty good. And they did the reversal of the what's up. Like Billy and Chuck reversed the what's up. And I hit that on them. But overall, it's not too much to write home around. I was kind of surprised Billy and Chuck lost, honestly. Like Devon and Farouk just sound like thrown together fodder team all the way, and then they end up winning. So I went 2 stars on it, man.
Yeah, I went a star and a half on it. Really felt like kind of like a piss break match after the Edge Angle match, just kind of like a come down match for the crowd. And I mean, good on the crowd because the crowd was hot for it. They were hot. They've been hot really through the entire show, and good on them for still being hot for what basically, I mean, I know it's a tag title tournament match, but it's basically a filler match. Good on them for being hot by it. And like you, I was surprised that Billy and Chuck lost, but yeah, it was a fairly standard tag team match. Not too many notes on it, so just star and a half.
Yeah, it's a good point. Probably a come down too. Yeah, it looks like Billy and Chuck. I wonder how long they stick together because it kind of. It seems like the magic's gone, for lack of a better term. It seems like once the jig is up, it's kind of like, what's the point? Like, they definitely don't seem like they want to be a team anymore. They don't have any matching gear. They're just like two dudes now. It's kind of weird.
Yep.
All right. Now we head backstage where we again see Dawn Marie, who approaches Al Wilson and asks if he would like to evaluate her bikini. And so we don't get to see, but she opens the rope to show Al. Al approves. And she says, thank you, Mr. Wilson. And he tells her, you can call me Al. So the
plot. You think she thickens. Asked him to be his bodyguard, and then he asked her to be his long lost pal? And then you could call him Al.
That's what I mean. I was about to say, I think I know my closing song for this pod now.
There you go.
Writes itself. Anyway, so we head down to the bikini contest. Weirdly horny Michael Cole in this whole thing because he's on commentary by himself because, of course, Taz is judging as he did last week. So he's doing like a weird, like he's kind of like a watered down king where he's not like making really pervy comments, but he's just like, oh man, like when Tori shows her bikini, he's like, oh, I love a flesh colored bikini. Like, what a weird comment.
Came across, like, across as extremely creepy. Yeah. Oh, I love the flesh.
Yeah. Like a flesh colored bikini. Yeah. Anyway, so Dawn's music, she has this like absurd like techno music. It was terrible. It's awful. Terrible. It's like a great value, like, I don't even know, the worst nightclub ever. But we are told this week we're not going to have judges. This week, as Taz says, the Cajuns are the judges here at the Cajun Dome. So the crowd are going to be judging here. They both look great, obviously, but you get a little more, I would say the main difference in the bikinis is that Tori's is a little more cheekage, I would say, more cheek leakage, I would say. But of course, Tori wins, as you would probably expect. Dawn is not happy. She ends up slapping Tori and throws her out of the ring. I said that Tori was doing she's kind of doing that Family Guy deal where she's like holding her leg on the outside, and or like the SpongeBob, what is it, like on my leg? She's just holding her leg for like extended amount of time. So, you know, it was a bikini contest. It was what it was. They were in bikinis. The crowd was excited. Taz was excited. Dawn slaps her. Possibly, as we know, the plot is going to thicken quite a bit in the coming months.
You know, thank goodness Taz was there to explain the rules, because I mean, I would have been completely lost otherwise. Thank goodness they pulled him away from comedy. just a basic segment, and starting to think that Dawn is going to become an Impact player for SmackDown. That's an ECW joke for all the kids out there.
There you go. Yeah, the bikini contest becoming a weekly thing on SmackDown lately. This is two weeks in a row.
Like, are they going to have a bikini contest champion? Like, is that where this was going? Like the battle of the bikini champion? I don't know. It's just weird that they're doing one of these like every week. Well, not weird. I get why they but like. I don't know.
It's going to go much further than that, Matt. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah, I know where it's going.
All right. We now head to Stephanie backstage, who's speaking with Heyman and Brock. She tells them that they have confirmed that Taker's hand is broken, which they are very pleased with. But she then tells them that he insists that he is still going to be ready for the match at No Mercy. And after conferring with Taker, she has decided to make it a Hell in a Cell match, which, of course, makes Heyman and Brock nervous. So, quite a development there. So they've done a good job of building this because it honestly doesn't get a ton of time for being their main event sort of angle. Mm-hmm. Like, they've accomplished a decent amount, which I think is another strength of SmackDown, that they're very efficient in their time. Yep. That they've kind of pushed this main event feud to the next level, and it's only really been featured for just a few minutes on this whole show, but they pushed it a pretty good deal, as we already kind of know where we're going with this. And I think it's a solid escalation too, based on how violent their match was at No Mercy and how the feud's been going. I think it's, you know, I think they earned the Hell in the Cell, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. Given, you know, like you said, the stuff that happened at Unforgiven, the stuff that happened, you know, just tonight. Yeah. I mean, you break somebody's hand, he's going to be pissed off at you. So a Hell in a Cell match makes sense. So never mind all the other stuff that's happened. Just the hand break, just breaking his hand alone would be enough to piss you off to want to kill
him. Putting your hand on his wife's womb. All that.
Yeah.
And we still have a few weeks left. Right. But anyway, already we go to our main event, which again, I think this is, you know, we haven't spent a ton of time talking about SmackDown, but I think that's the strength of SmackDown too. It's just very tight. There's not a ton of segments everywhere. Everything kind of comes in, does what it's supposed to do in the show. Like, I think it makes sense that we've kind of talked about SmackDown quicker because it's just a quicker paced show. It goes by easier, I think. It's a quicker watch, so it makes sense. But our main event is going to be Rey Mysterio versus Benoit. So another awesome-looking match on paper. Benoit starts off by wrecking Rey early, going after with some vicious offenses early. Rey's able to turn the tide with his reversals and his quickness, which kind of becomes the story of this entire match, is Benoit's kind of like power advantage and maybe his aggressiveness versus Rey's quickness and aerial attacks as usual. So a pretty simple story, but executed well. Taz says that Benoit needs to ground him. So again, Taz is always awesome here. They're really locked in on commentary. I think Cole sets up Taz pretty well a lot of these times. Like, he'll ask Taz, what do you think, Taz? Like, what does Rey need to do, or what does Benoit need to do? And Taz will actually tell him. Like, you know, King, I think sometimes you could ask him stuff like that and he might just blow it off. Mm-hmm. Where Taz is like, always has good points to make. He's really awesome. We get a sick backbreaker as Benoit catches Rey midair and just lands in a backbreaker, which was brutal. He grounds him with the with kind of like a cross, like almost like a bow and arrow type choke. And he's firmly in control, Benoit, at this point. You get a few attempts by Rey to land something, but he just can't get anything going, which he's doing some insane bumping in this match. Like, anytime he's going into the corners, he's just smashing into the turnbuckle and flattening out, just crumpling to the ground, really selling this stuff, which makes his comeback even better when he finally does mount his comeback as he starts to mount it. But Benoit, again, catches him in the moonsault, but Rey comes back with a kick off it. So tons of sick reversals. Rey hits the enziguri. Benoit comes back with a shoulder breaker. He hits the headbutt as usual, but as always, the amount of time he has to recover from it always bites him in the ass and gives his opponent too much time to recover. And Rey does and is able to kick out. And you know, I haven't said every spot Rey does, but Rey's offense in this match is just ridiculous. Like, man, him in this era, it's like, I know him in like 96 when he first comes into WCW is awesome, but to me, he's almost on that level here. He is just pulling out all kind of shit and it looks incredible. Every single move he does just looks amazing. Like, crazy leg drops and springboards and all kind of shit. It's just, it's incredible. But he goes for some kicks and he goes for the 619. He misses it, but we now see Angle has come out. He does a hangman on Benoit on the ropes, which allows Rey to come in and roll him up and get the win on Benoit. So Angle gets his revenge on Benoit for costing the match earlier. Just an awesome power versus speed match to close out the show. This one got a decent amount of time too, a good 10 or 15 minutes. But, man, it was kind of the same style. I don't think it was on the level as the Kurt Rey match from SummerSlam, but it was kind of in that same realm. They were kind of working that same style, the same kind of power and technical ability versus the speed. And it, man, it really hit. I went 3.5 on it. I thought it was a really awesome match.
Yeah, really cool match just on paper. Like, I think they had crossed paths like in tag matches in WCW, but I don't think they had ever faced each other one-on-one. So kind of a cool match. And they just went nonstop for, like you said, 10, 15 minutes. I would have been interested to see what they would have done with, you know, like 20 minutes like Edge and Angle had, because I think they could have had something really special with another 5 minutes. Just really fast paced. Rey was getting the shit kicked out of him. Some of his selling was unbelievable. Benoit just chopping the shit out of him. There was a nasty wheelbarrow suplex to Rey that Rey just like crumpled to the mat, like you said. Just Rey's so good here. Just like you said, I mean, he's just flying around the ring, and he hadn't lost it yet. And I mean, the knee surgeries hadn't really come into play yet, so he could still really fly around the ring, like, you know, Rey could, like peak Rey could. God, this was just really, really fun and kind of a hidden gem. Like, it's a SmackDown match you don't really hear about. Like, when I saw this on paper, I was like, oh man, this could be something neat. And turns out it was weird given who was involved. Yeah. Just a super fun match. Great way to close the show. 3.5 for me, too.
Yeah, I think they actually mentioned on commentary, to their credit too, that they haven't met in a singles match before, which is really cool that they actually would acknowledge that. But yeah, the thing about Ray, he's been on fire like since he debuted in WWE. But it would just be insane to me to think, like, if the last you saw him was in WCW without the mask and all,
right,
and you see him come back in full Raymo with the mask and he's just tearing it up like this. It's just it's just awesome to see.
Yep.
And another benefit, like the match earlier with Edge and Edge and Angle here, you have this awesome match, but in the end, they still make sure they're pushing along the feud by having Kurt come out and cost them the match. And then they end up, so Kurt and Benoit kind of scrap after the match and go back and forth, and they have to kind of have a bunch of security and officials come out to separate them. Really awesome intensity, because, I mean, what would you expect from those two guys? They're intense and everything. But they have to be separated. We kind of close the show on that. So, again, it kind of – it's something they've done well throughout the whole show. It's not like – they don't forget that they have feuds and stuff to push, even though they want to – like they do – as we get into, like, our overall thoughts, that, to me, what was so awesome about how they're running SmackDown here is because it's just a good show. You have the perfect mix of, like, really good wrestling – but also pushing your stories along and not forgetting about your feuds. Like, it's not, it's like a perfect balance. And the show is very tight. They come in, like we said, with the world title stuff. They don't come out and let Taker ramble on the mic for 20 minutes and cut some long promo about Brock. They just come in, they push it along. It's very efficient. It's real tight. It makes the show fly by. It's awesome. They're really starting to cook with gas on SmackDown. I went 7 out of 10 on it. I thought it was another really awesome SmackDown.
Yeah, I actually went higher than you. I went 7.5 out of 10 on this. Yep. Just a much better show than Raw. Two great, great TV matches. Angles that made sense. You know, everything with the only exception really being Jamie Noble and Crash Holly. Like, everything served a purpose. Built the angles further and further. And, you know, in the case of, like, Dawn Marie and Tori, started a new angle with Al. But, yeah, just it's a tight show, like you said. The show absolutely flew by when I was watching it. The 90 minutes went by in a flash. Yeah, just really great stuff. SmackDown is absolutely firing on all cylinders right now, and so much better than Raw. It really isn't funny, and it's kind of sad that, you know, and we're kind of in a similar boat current day, whereas the same company is, you know, Raw is one way and SmackDown is another way. A lot of kind of similarities between 2002 and 2021. It's kind of interesting. Parallels can be drawn between both years, but yeah. Just a really, really great show. Definitely check out both Edge Angle and Ray Benoit if you haven't seen those. Just really, really great stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I would think, yeah, I'm with you, though. I think that Ray Benoit is probably more under the radar. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to say that Edge match is probably known a little bit. But, yeah, the Ray Benoit might be a little forgotten. But, yeah, and another thing, last thing I'll say about it, I think that helps. Because, you know, like you said, we get the Noble crash match, which was kind of throwaway. But I think it helps when you don't stack those together.
Right.
Like, you know, it doesn't really bother you because it's like they just come in and get out. And it's not – like, I find on Raw sometimes you get, like, three matches in a row that are kind of just like, meh, like nothing matches. And that's when they can kind of build on each other. I think in a two-hour show – you know, like if this was on TV, it'd be 2 hours. You're not going to have balls to the wall, 4-star matches every time. You're going to need filler. But I think the way they construct it, it makes the filler not as glaring when you can kind of just throw between a couple awesome things. It's just, I don't know. It's just well done. It's just well constructed. It's awesome. But with that, we'll go to our awards. Best match. I think we've based on our ratings. We both have Edge Kurt.
Yep. Absolutely.
With we'll probably say honorable mention to because I think on most weeks you'd probably get Ray Benoit, but yeah, the fact that you have both of those on one show is kind of crazy, just on a week of TV. Yeah. Best moment, I'm gonna go with Brock breaking Taker's hand.
Yeah, I went with the same thing, but honorable mention to I really liked the Edge Angle pre-match backstage segment, but yeah, Brock crushing Taker's hand.
Best show, I think SmackDown easily. I think we've established that.
Oh yeah, not even a debate.
Yeah. LVP, I actually went with Big Show. I just feel like he's just, I don't know, he just looks like a goof, kind of. He's not doing anything, even though we'll see in the coming months. I mean, it'll be shocking where he ends up considering right now, but I feel like if a few candidates, I went with Big Show. What'd you have, Matt?
Yeah, Big Show was one of them. This was kind of tough for me because there was like nobody that was really like actively bad. Like, I mean, you could argue Bischoff, but for that opening segment. But like, I was torn, so I ended up going Triple H for his Harley Race cosplay and for his you know, just the whole package with that world title match. I mean, you could give it to Bubba Ray if you want to, but yeah, I mean, I think. The other one I batted around to for LVP was just the Un-Americans as a whole because they're really going down the tubes. But you know what? Fuck it. Give it to the Un-Americans. I'm talking myself into it because I just think...
That is a good one, yeah.
After being, you know, relatively hot over the summer and, you know, in 2 short months, how they're basically done. I don't know. It's just they're circling the bull quick and they're not long for this WWE world.
Kane was like their death knell. Like as soon as Kane came back, like they were toast. Like he just destroyed them, and now they're like, I don't know. As soon as he showed up, they were toast. Nothing left. MVP. I'm gonna go with Kurt.
Yeah, same for me. Kurt. I almost gave it to Kurt and Edge, but I just think Angle was just a little bit better than Edge in that match, so went with Angle.
I agree. When in doubt, go with Kurt. He's just a man. He's probably the MVP of the podcast.
He's on another level than everybody else. It's really crazy to see.
I think the thing about him, too, is that even if, like, you could say maybe Edge matched him in the ring possibly in that match, but he's just so good in his promos and his interviews, too. Like, he always has these classic lines, like, or just the moment where he does the, he's like, all right, no touching. All right, we're done.
Yeah.
And then just punching him again. Just stuff like all these little things. It's, amazing. Top five. So besides Kurt, let's see. So I had Ray and Benoit for that main event. They're definitely my top five. I put Jericho because I thought he busted his ass in that main event. Edge for being with Kurt in that match. And then I actually went Victoria because I think she's been really impressing on Raw.
Yep. So my five were Edge, Angle, Ray, Benoit, and Jericho. So pretty similar.
Very good. Yeah, got to give credit to Jericho. I think, you know, if SmackDown wouldn't be so otherworldly right now, I think Jericho could add MVP performance on Raw, but, you know, for what he did in that one. But all right, well, that wraps us up. Matt, it was a fun show. I'm glad glad you got in for some awesome matches, at least on the SmackDown side.
Those matches, I've been thinking a lot about them since I watched them there. Again, if you haven't seen Edge Angle or Ray Benoit, definitely go find them because they are really, really great, great TV matches. So, but always fun to be with you, Jake, on this show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It holds up, too. So I'm starting to notice, like, the SmackDown 6 stuff is so iconic that you wonder, like, well, with everything we've seen in the past 20 years, is it going to hold up? And so far, it definitely has. Like, it's still, you know, awesome to watch now. Like, even with all the, you know, NXT and all the stuff where they do so many crazy matches all the time. But what you have going on, Matt, that you like to plug?
Well, like you mentioned at the top, you can find me and Jake, of course, on Highway to the Impact Zone over on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. And you can find me over on the Place to Be Nation pop feed on my show, Piece of the Action, a action movie live watch podcast. I have a guest on that every month, and we basically just live watch an action movie. It's a great time. Check all those out.
Yeah, I'll put over a Piece of Action too. It's an awesome pod. You've done a lot of awesome movies so far. You haven't been doing it a super long time yet, but we already hit. Like, I came on, we did Total Recall, which was super fun. You've done Terminator. Like, you've hit a lot of the big hitters so far, and it's a really fun concept for a podcast. You know, it's laid back, kind of the, I guess you would say the, like the Mystery Science Theater sort of style, where you just kind of watch the movie and crack jokes and talk about it, which is real fun. So if anybody has to check that out, I would definitely go and check it out for sure. That will wrap us up for this episode of the Aggressive Podcast. I'll be back in 2 weeks where we're definitely going to have quite some developments going on, especially on the Raw side, some infamous developments as we head into No Mercy. I'm going to quickly pivot into some strange territory, but I think if nothing else, it will be entertaining to talk about if maybe it's not the greatest thing. Like we're putting over this episode of SmackDown, it might not be entertaining for those reasons, but it will surely be interesting. And it will be, it will be something for sure. But anyway, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening, as always, and take care. When you call me, you can call me out. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and oh, my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, there were incidents and accidents, there were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you daddy, and daddy when you call me, you can call me out, call me out.
Speak language, he holds no currency, he is a foreign man.